Scott, T-Bob, where are you?
Right here, Dad.
If you are looking for us, oh, why didn't you just whistle? You have tulips, don't you?
Come on, you clowns.
Hello and welcome to Mass Mayhem. This is episode 15. I bet you're wondering, where the hell have we been the last 2 years? Well, Miles Mayhem has had us locked up. Probably the most confident thing he ever did was fool Optimus Solo. He still has Optimus Solo captive. I'm your host, TFG1 Mike, and introducing a brand new host to Mass Mayhem, Toon Master Tim. Hello, sir.
Hello, everybody. I'm Mike. Thanks for having me co-host the episode. I'm happy to be here and been a long time GCRN listener, of course. So it's good to be back on a podcast. We did record a while back a GCRN Wars episode, Silverhawks versus Thundercats, which was a lot of fun for those who held on for the 3 hours of that debate.
So as I said, Mass Mayhem has been on a very, very unscheduled, constant interruption, 2 year hiatus. I planned to have this show done before now, really did. Things just kept coming up in Kevin's personal life and my personal life, and we just couldn't get around to it. We deeply apologize to the listeners, but Tim and I are here to finish it off, and It's kind of fitting that we come back at episode 15 because the show's only 30. The podcast is only 30 episodes, so we've only got 15 more to go. Briefly, why don't you give the listeners some info on what your history with Mask is, since we're kind of starting kind of fresh, and what your, you know, if you grew up with it, and I know you were listening when we were originally doing the show, and what your kind of opinions are on the show so far.
Okay, sure. Well, it was a show that I knew about as a child. I saw the commercials for the toys, but I didn't get a station that the cartoon actually came on, so I never got to watch Mask episodes until Shout Factory released that entire series set. Mm-hmm. And so I was excited to get to watch it for the first time because I did think the toys were very cool, and I never had any of the toys, as I recall, but my brother did have the Thunderhawk. You know, that was such a cool toy and a cool vehicle. And of course, you know, I wanted to get Rhino, but, you know, that never happened for whatever reason. And usually, it's funny, though, I think about it, because, you know, my brother and I were only separated by a year in age. So usually we got something similar. So I don't know why I didn't get a Mask toy as well. I must have gotten something else. It wasn't a Mask toy, but it must have been some sort of vehicle, because that's just how things went. You know, if he got a G.I. Joe, I got a G.I. Joe. You know, if he got a Transformer, I got a Transformer. That's just how it worked. But
Maybe your parents decided to be cruel and give him all the cool Mask toys and saddle you with GoBots.
No, so we didn't have any GoBots. Yeah.
Good parents, good parenting.
Although I did get to watch GoBots when I was younger. And I did not get to watch Transformers, so I did miss out on that in my childhood.
Yes. So what are your initial opinions on the season so far? We're starting in this episode of the podcast. We will be covering episodes 35, 36, and 37. What are your initial opinions on the first 34 episodes of the series?
Well, I pretty much agree with you and Kevin on a lot of the rankings for the episodes. There are some that are not so bad and tolerable, then there are others that are just cringeworthy. As and we'll get into that with these episodes this week too. There are some good ones, and there's, you know, one that's not so good in my opinion. They're not the best. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a mashup sort of Transformers and G.I. Joe. It's a good way to describe the series, but the writing is just not very good.
No,
it really isn't. The plots are not very strong, and you've had the same cast of characters pretty much every episode. I mean, they do mix it up with, you know, the Venom team members, the Mask team members, but we know that it's going to be Venom that's, you know, causing whatever trouble there is that week. So it's sort of redundant and eventually becomes uninteresting to a certain point. But I still like the show. I still enjoy it for what it is.
Do you have any favorite characters or least favorite characters?
I don't know. I don't think that there are a lot of strong characters. I mean, they try to do some things with some of the characters, like in the Mask team, you know, they've got you know, the Master of Disguise, and Alex is really cool. He's very smart, and he knows technology, and he, you know, drives Rhino, so that's really cool. I guess the character I probably like the most, now that I think about it, is Sly Rax on the Venom team, because he's just always butting heads with Miles. You know, he doesn't mind going up against him and just telling him, you know, this is a stupid idea, or, you know, he's almost like the Starscream, but he's not quite to that level. But
yeah,
he's always kind of in contention with Miles, and I like that.
Yeah, Rax doesn't have Starscream's need for control of certain factions. Okay, least favorite characters.
You know, I know that you don't like T-Bob, but I don't find him that annoying.
My God. It's not just him. It's both him and Scott. Together, they suck.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I do find annoying about T-Bob is his puns and just these terrible lines that they give him. That's meant to be humorous, and it's just not funny. But I don't hate him. I mean, he's okay, but he's probably the most annoying character in the show. I mean, he and Scott, like you said, but Scott's, he's not as bad as some other sidekick, you know, young kid characters in other shows.
I don't know if I'm going to do this, but I really want to get all of the classic 80s action cartoon children together and do some sort of top 10 or top 20 best to worst or worst to best countdown of who is actually the worst kid in an 80s cartoon series. I still maintain it, Scott. Out of all the kids in the 80s, out of those kids on Dungeons and Dragons, Spike and Chip from Transformers, who else? Some of the girls from Gem, the Starlight Girls. I really want to do that. I want to get a countdown going of from worst to best, as far as the 80s kid cartoon characters, because I have never been so infuriated with any other character other than Scott Tracker. This kid just,
yeah, he's written to always get in trouble. You know, he's doing things he's not supposed to do, and his dad's trying to, you know, to go find him or figure out what he got into. He's always messing around with T-Bob. You know, he's always tinkering with T-Bob and, you know, turning him into a popcorn holder or a popcorn maker or toaster or something. And that always causes problems. I mean, yeah, they are annoying. As I'm running down the list of other characters like that and other cartoons, I'm beginning to see what you're saying, that, yeah, he probably more annoying. Most annoying, maybe. Definitely in the top five, top three.
Top two, most likely. There was one time I really loved a joke that Scott did with T-Bob, and that was, I forget which episode it was in, but they were at some restaurant or something, and they were eating spaghetti and meatballs, and we had, oh look, T-Bob doggy bag to go. So I did kind of like that, where he had the spaghetti in his little compartment or whatever it was. But yeah, no. All right, folks, we're going to get into the episodes right after this.
Better go after him, Scott. Looks like he's malfunctioning.
Aw, Dad.
He's your responsibility.
Oh, T-Bob.
Computer, list any unusual events preceding the collapse of the dike.
One ultrasound analyzer unit stolen 17 days ago. Theft unexplainable because device has only one purpose, to examine dikes.
It worked perfectly. This modified analyzer destroyed the dike with pure ultrasonic vibration.
You're sure nobody detected the source?
No one would think to look for something so simple. Only animals can hear it. It drives them nuts.
Boy, if this little thing can do all that damage, then this baby really ought to rattle some cages.
All right, folks, so here's the thing. Optimus Solo is no longer on this podcast as of this episode. Tim has graciously taken his place. Kevin did tell me he was not interested in finishing out Mask. The cartoon just had no interest for him anymore, so he went ahead and told me that I'd go ahead and recast. And I figured, oh, hey, let's bring Tim in. Let's subject him to the horror of this cartoon. And here's the thing. Optimus Solo is a very awesome guy. He's a very in-depth guy. He goes above and beyond, but I'm not like that. This cartoon to me is so bad, it does not deserve me writing out an entire plot synopsis. So from here on out, I will be reading the very short mini plot synopsises from Wiki. Tim will still give us what Optimus Solo did with who, what characters are in each episode. So he'll give us who's on the Mask team and who's on the Venom team after I read the plot synopsis. So the first episode, Season 1, Episode 35, title is in Dutch, the air date was November 15th, 1985. A madman hires Venom to destroy the flood dikes in the Netherlands, if their parliament doesn't allow him a political position. What do we have on the teams this time around?
Alright, well, on the Mask team, we have Gloria, Dusty, and Brad, who joined Matt for this adventure. Actually, I didn't write down who was on the Venom team.
I think it's the usuals. I think it's Miles, Vanessa,
Rax,
and Dagger. And Dagger, yeah. In Dutch, oh boy, the plot is average at best, I would say. You're going to destroy something in order for the government to give you up as a political position. I mean, that's kind of like it's kind of like something, you know, from today's standards almost.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is sort of a typical average plot, but I kind of like what they did with it. I mean, we start off with Scott, T-Bob, and Matt talking with a gentleman. They're standing, you know, in this field of flowers. It's very colorful, and he's explaining, you know, the purpose of the dikes, that, you know, Holland is below sea level and all this, and you know, they're worried about the dikes possibly breaking. And then, you know, we turn to some scientists or some guys who have this analyzer in the back of the pickup truck, and it's supposed to analyze the dike and make sure that it's safe and it's, you know, structurally sound. And they have this thing give us reading and say, oh yeah, you know, it's going to stand here for 50 years. But then before long, like, some weird things start happening. We hear some dogs barking, and then the dike starts to break apart and busts, and all this water comes flooding through, and they have to basically climb up a tree to avoid, being drowned in the water. So, I mean, you're kind of left wondering what is going on. And the thing that caught me was, you know, okay, well, what was the deal with the dogs barking? You know, how does that come into play? Which we find out later on.
Venom is using ultrasonic frequencies.
Right. And that's how they were able to break up the dike.
Yeah. This plot is way too average for me. I mean, it really starts out as a mystery, mm-hmm. but as soon as we find out that it's Venom using ultrasonics, and honestly, you know, as I watch this, it's been, like I said, 2 years since I've even looked at this cartoon, since we did episode 14 way back in 2012. As soon as we find out it's Venom, I'm like, oh, of course. Duh, of course it's going to be Venom. And it just, I don't know. This cartoon, I will say this, I know people will get sick of me saying this between this episode and the final episode of this series that we do, episode 30 of the podcast. I will say this once an episode. This cartoon is, there's only two good things about it. The theme song and when they assembled the team. That's it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I mean, there are some episodes that aren't so bad, but it is sort of the same idea, same plot recycled over and over. Now, the thing is, you can look at other cartoons and say, oh, well, G.I. Joe, for example, was the sort of same thing. Like, we knew it was going to be Cobra. Yeah, you did, but you had a much broader cast of characters and much stronger.
You had much better writers.
and better writers. And Mask doesn't have that. I mean, I wish that they had the title on the episode and we could see also who was getting the writing credit. For things like with Mask, it's just basically a bunch of staff writers. And I know they have credits at the end of the episode, so you get to see who the writers are, but I don't think I've ever seen them actually credit the episode to a specific writer.
No.
On DVD sets, I mean, speaking of writing, on the DVD sets, there's some bonus features, and I believe that they talked to some of the creators of the show, and they were talking about how they were very careful about the plots, and the head writers wanted to make sure that the shows were intelligently written, and it seemed like the writers were put through a lot of I don't know, they were given a lot of direction on what they were supposed to write into these episodes to make them better, and I don't really think they delivered on a lot of the episodes.
I think there's only one episode out of this entire series to this point that I absolutely loved. I honestly don't know how many, five masks out of five I've ever given this series, but it was season 1, episode 24, The Counterclockwise Caper, which is set in Las Vegas.
Yes, I remember that one, yeah.
That is the only episode, outside of the very first episode when we first see the history and the first team up, the first episode and that episode are the only ones in season 1 to this point that I have absolutely said I absolutely love. The rest of them are either just mediocre, I don't care, or they're just god-awful. All right, so in Dutch, the plot I don't feel that it's executed very well. I don't feel it's written very well. Any other thoughts before we hit the high beams, if there are any?
Are we talking low beams right now, or just...
No. And final thoughts on the plot.
I think you've pretty much said it. It's fairly weak. There are a few action moments that occur during the episode that I think do carry it, even though that the plot is fairly thin. But yeah, the plot itself is just, you know, it's a typical recycled plot we've seen before.
Yeah. All right. We're going to hit the high beams after this.
You can see, Mr. Tracker, the dikes are very well constructed. After all, we've been doing this for hundreds of years.
Was there any sort of natural force that could have...
There were no high winds, no waves, no earthquake.
Then it must have been an unnatural force.
Come on, T-Bob. Let's go back to the cottage.
At least one of these darn things flies, and I'm going to find it.
They're all the same. They're just windmills.
Oh, yeah? Oh, what about that one?
What about it?
The sails are turning the wrong way. Not that one. That one over there.
You're right. Let's check it out.
At last, something's blowing my way.
All right, we are turning on the high beams. This is more of a plot observation than a real high beam, but I wrote down under high beams for this episode. I bet that flying windmill is Switchblade. Well, duh.
Well, you know what? Actually, I have here my high beams that I didn't expect the Switchblade to be in that flying windmill. So it was kind of a surprise for me. I don't know why I didn't see that coming, but for some reason I didn't. So I was like, oh, that was clever. I thought it was just going to be a windmill that was, you know, carrying some device or some machine, but I should have known.
My other high beam is Switchblade farted in Thunderhawk's face. This image will be in the post, people.
Oh, yeah, I actually like that. So what's happening is, Matt is trying to follow the flying windmill and the Thunderhawk. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, the Switchblade cuts loose. We find out that it was a Switchblade under there all along. And then part of the windmill gets caught on the windshield of the Thunderhawk. And so Matt can't see. He's trying to get it off. And then all of a sudden, Miles brings the Switchblade down in front of him and just turns the burners on and scorches the windshield of the Thunderhawk and sends him crashing into the water. That was pretty cool.
It was an awesome scene because it really looked like the Switchblade was farting on the Thunderhawk. After the fire from the burners, you see kind of the smoke, and it's kind of white, you know, smoke and whatever else.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, the image will be in the post for people so they can see what we're talking about, but it was just so friggin' funny. What stuff do you have for high beams?
Well, other than the Switchblade being hidden inside the flying windmill. I like the animation in this episode, and I'm not going to bring this up all the time because I think the story really is what carries the episodes. But sometimes the animation is just really good and it's spot on. And this is one of those episodes where it really was spot on. I mean, the characters and all the vehicles looked like they were on model. It was very fluid. So I that's one of the reasons I think I enjoyed watching this episode. Like I said, there was enough action in between these plot points to keep it moving. I didn't feel bored, even though it wasn't necessarily a new plot, or, you know, something different that we hadn't really seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And as much as I, you know, now that I'm thinking about this, after the Thunderhawk lands, I will have a negative moment about this, but after it lands and is in the water and Matt realizes, hey, wait, rockets can fire underwater.
Yeah.
I did kind of like him streaking up the side of the duct or whatever it was. It was a cool image, but just the whole process of even getting that done is such a low beam. So I think we're going to turn the low beams on after this.
This is the one time Mask won't be butting in. Happy landing!
Let's turn on the low beams for In Dutch. Oh God. I'm already cringing. Two lips, really, T-Bitch? Come on, that's a horrible line. Ugh.
Yeah, it is. I had the same issue with that. I mean, in the first few minutes of this episode, we're getting so many puns, it is not funny. I mean, literally, it is not funny. I mean, the two lips, and then they're talking about the dike holding back the water, and T-Bob even says something like, you know, being on the level, and they just kept coming. I stopped writing them down. I mean, it was just so bad.
There's only one other one I wrote down because it was just so bad. But my next one is, okay, seriously, Switchblade blasted Thunderhawk with its jets. Thunderhawk looks blackened and bruised on the hood. It lands in the water without the blackened bruising. And then when it returns, the car is upside down under the water. Really? Come on, animators. Oh, God. And then the one that I did have for the other quote, wait a minute, I can barely understand you.
Oh,
I so want a super glue T-Bob to a nuclear bomb. Seriously. Oh, my God.
See, it's lines like that they give T-Bob often, and that's one of the reasons why you can't like him. I mean, how are you going to like somebody that's always saying things like that? It's just terrible. Just terrible lines to give any character.
So terrible. I felt, as I was watching this, I felt that the episode was just there, honestly. There was no real story behind it all. Like, there wasn't any great mystery. There wasn't... we find out it's Venom, and that's that. And my final note was... Part of the PSA, stunted growth, really? Come on, T-Bob. What about you for low beams?
Well, the other thing I have that you didn't have is something we haven't talked about, is that the evil guy wanting to be prime minister, he's actually stroking a cat. Yes.
Yeah.
He is the evil guy who's stroking a cat.
It's a James Bond reference, yeah.
Yeah, that is true. So they were giving homage to that, but I was just like, oh my goodness, this is so cliche. Bad.
I think the other change we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, now that we're back here on the podcast, is we're going to give the ratings right after the low beams. For me... The puns were so cringeworthy. Like, I get it. It's the 80s. I'm not saying that Mask stands up to today's standard of television writing or animation writing or any... I'm looking at this show as it was. And even back then, I grant you, I bet you, as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old watching this, I would have cringed at some of these lines. They're so bad. For me, I'm going to give it 2 out of 5 masks. There were, like I said, I did enjoy the Switchblade farting in Thunderhawk's face, and I did kind of predict that the windmill was going to be Switchblade, but, the rest of it is just, What about you?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I did like some of the action in this episode. I thought the animation was very good and helped carry the episode, and it really pushed some of the action. I'm going to give it 3 masks. I think it was kind of in the middle of the road. It wasn't too bad. It was one that I could watch again. So, yeah.
No. I will never watch this episode again. No way. You couldn't pay me $1 billion to watch this episode again. Oh my god. All right, we'll be back with the next episode after this.
I'm seeing it, but I know no horse can do that kind of stuff.
The Lipizzan are stallions, Ken. They're trained for years.
And they do this kind of stuff every day?
No, this is a special performance. In honor of the Emir of Amra.
Hey, Dad, watch this. Neat, huh?
I've got over 1,000,000 motivation and logic circuits in me. And what does he use me for? Popcorn box.
So up next is the Lipizzaner, whatever the hell mystery. Okay. Venom steals the famous Lipizzaner stallions, where an Arab purchases them for $5 million. But the Mask team member Dusty Hayes foils their heist. A mystery of horses, really? Really? Your standard horse smuggling operation, like... No, seriously.
Yeah.
This reminds me, if Venom was gonna steal one horse instead of all 5 of them, or 10 of them, or however many of these damn things there were, if they were going to steal one horse, you know, fake its death, and then give it to the guy at some other point so that no one thinks the horse is still alive, I'm like, okay, that's the King Jack episode from Knight Rider.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Oh, this plot.
Well, and they do it for actually a small amount of money for an organization like Venom. I mean, they tell the guy that they want $1 million to steal the horses.
And $4 million for something else.
Yeah, they ask him to cough up $4 million for delivery of the horses.
Yeah.
Which I actually kind of like that. I like that, you know, they tell this guy, yeah, we'll do it, you know, for this much money, and then they do it and you know, turn the tables and ask for more money. I like the twist that Amir is the guy that wanted to buy the horses from Venom. That he was, in the beginning, he was the one they were putting on the show for with the Lipizzaner horses. And mm-hmm. then later we find out that he is actually the one responsible for them being kidnapped so that he can purchase them for Venom. And yeah, again, that's a plot twist we should have seen coming, but I thought
that I kind of did see it coming. I was like, that guy is... I was kind of like playing my own version of what's his name from Iron Man 3? Crap. I was going to say Foggy Nelson, but that was Daredevil. Happy. I was kind of like the Happy Hogan of the 80s watching this episode because I'm like, yeah, there's something suspicious about this guy. I'm going to follow this guy because I kind of feel like it wasn't a shock to me that he, because I've seen so many plots like this before, because what they'll do is they'll set the guy up in the beginning to be, oh, he's such a good guy, and then, you know, midway through the episode, oh, no, he's the one actually behind the whole thing.
Yeah, I see that, but at first I was just going along with it, and they didn't really give any indication that he had anything to do with it. You know, at first, they're just there, you know, watching the horses put on this show, and then they get spooked, and they all run off, and they run into this area where basically they can't get out, but all of a sudden they're missing, and so that's really kind of a mystery that is weaved in the plot as well, as that Matt's trying to figure out what happened to these horses. You know, they ran down this hall, and there's nothing but a bunch of locked cages, so where did they go? And they see the horse prints in the dirt. And then it's not until later that, you know, Scott says something about, what was it, a trap door, or I don't know, something that made him think about that. It's like, oh yeah, obviously it's a trap door.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how they smuggled the horses out.
Yeah, because they look at the old building plans for the place, and they find that there is an old tunnel under it.
Right.
Plot. Honestly, out of the two episodes, I'd watch In Dutch again before I watch this again. All right, we are gonna hit the high beams after this.
Not through here to the stables. It's latched from this side.
And the tracks end here in the tunnel. They just disappear.
My thanks to you for turning aside the stampede.
Oh, shucks. It was my pleasure. I ain't had so much fun since the hogs ate Uncle George.
But no one has found the horses?
No. The tracks end in the dead-end tunnel.
It is a shame. Myself, I would give my entire fortune for just one of those beautiful Lipizzaners.
So before we get to the high beams, we forgot to include who the team members are this time around. Who are they?
For Mass, we have Dusty and Mac. Gloria and Buddy join up later. One of the interesting things here is that we actually see what they're doing this time, which we didn't see in the previous episode in Dutch. So mm-hmm. we see Gloria's at the dentist, and she's in the chair, and there's a whole, there's a girl next to her in the other chair holding a teddy bear, and so Gloria has to jet off, and she asks the girl if she can borrow the teddy bear, and then Gloria puts the teddy bear in the dentist chair. And then we see Buddy running to give a woman a bouquet of roses,
He's got a hot date.
He's got a hot date, but he just leaves her standing there with the roses and takes off. And the other thing that was interesting is that when Matt assembles the mass team in this episode, their names are not called out by the computer. So we just simply flash to what the team members are doing when they're called.
Right, right.
And then on the Venom team, we have Miles and Rax, who are later joined by Dagger and Vanessa.
Hmm. All right, so for High Beams, it gave me a laugh and an eye roll that Scott's idea of fun is trouble. I love the shot where Matt is pretty much right on top of Rax. I think it was when he was in Thunderhawk, he nearly landed the front end of the car right on Rax's head. I thought that was hilarious. I wrote this note, and I honestly don't... I just watched these episodes a day before we recorded this. I honestly don't remember why I wrote this down, but Matt Tracker is dead. Podcast over. Good night, everybody. It was after the Rax thing. I'm not sure exactly, because I write my notes as the episode progresses.
Right.
T-Bob wrecks a hotel just like a rock star would. ride 'em, Dusty. Yeehaw! Good Lord. What'd you have for High Beams?
I like that they use the mask powers more in this episode, so that was really cool to see. Although, this almost sounds like it just doesn't sound good. It sounds like BSDM or something. The whip and the penetrator. I mean, they actually call out the names. Whip! Mm-hmm. And then, then I think Vanessa's power calls out the penetrator.
Penetrator is Brad, I think.
Okay, it's Brad and then the whip.
Brad or Dusty. And she has the whip.
Okay. But they just set them basically back to back, and became very evident. It was like, struck a chord. It's like, wow, that doesn't sound good for little kids to be yelling that out as they're playing with the mask toys.
Go ahead.
And like I said, I actually did like the twist of Amir being the buyer of the stallions. Because, like I said, I should have picked up on that, but I was just going along with it, so I thought that was a nice twist in the plot. I also like the explosions of the switchblade. Those were pretty cool because it gets hit hard. I mean, that whole glass canopy, it just shatters, and then Matt completely blows it up. I mean, the switchblade is blown to pieces.
Yeah, it is. And yet, in the very next episode, it's completely fine.
Oh, yeah.
all right. Any other High Beams?
There were a couple of lines I thought were pretty funny. Scott says something like, "Where's your spirit of adventure?" And then T-Bob responds to the effect of, "I think it's the first thing you took out."
Yeah, that is kind of funny. That's not as cheesy as some of his other lines.
Yeah. I give them some credit for that, because usually it's puns, as we said before. So that was pretty good.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back with Low Beams after this.
I wonder what this is.
A sonic transmitter producing a sound pitch too high for human ears.
So this is what they use to spook the horses.
Variable frequency transmitter at 30,000 cycle note. Original research done at International Electronics. Believed stolen by Venom.
Venom!
Alright, we are turning on the low beams for the horse mystery show. Stop being cocky, Scott. I don't know, he was doing something. I don't know. And seriously, let him go every friggin' time and say, "Oh, but we got the real culprit right here."
Yeah, I didn't like that either.
God,
you're just gonna have to catch him tomorrow, Matt.
I know, but see, here's the thing. What if they caught them, put them in jail, and then they escape? They could always escape. So, instead of consistently letting the bad guy go every single episode, it's just... What low beams did you have for this one?
I just have one, but did you catch some of the strange lines that Buddy had? When, like, he called the horses crow bait. I mean, where did that come from? That's just, I think that's an odd thing to have in an animated show. And why call a horse crow bait? That seems funny to me. I didn't get it. And then there's the other line when he's saving the boy from the stampede of the horses. And he answers Matt with something like, you know, well, I haven't had that much fun since the pigs ate Uncle George. I'm like, what? What did I just hear? I actually had to go back and listen to it again. I'm like, what did he just say?
It wasn't that they attempted to eat Uncle George, that they ate Uncle George.
Yeah, wow. Since the pigs ate Uncle George, if I heard it correctly. I listened to it twice.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, the writing in this show is not very good at all. When you said the horses would be crow bait, all as I can think of is Roger Rabbit. My Uncle Thumper had to go to probate one time and took these big pills. Not prostate, you idiot, probate.
Yeah.
For Lipizzander, one mask out of five. After I watched it, and I watched it twice, I watched it the first time to get the audio clips, and I watched it the second time taking notes, and even though I don't have a lot of low beams on this one, it reminds me too much of every other horse-stealing plot I've ever seen. And it's just that bad. What about you?
I'm going to give it four masks because I...
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I like the action on this one. I know. It is a tired plot. It's something we've seen before. But I have to remember this is Mask, and this was one of the episodes that... It was watchable. I didn't get bored with it. I was wanting to see what happened, and like I said, there was some good action in it. There were a few funny lines, so overall, I'm going to give it an above-average rating of 4.
All right, we're going to move on to the final episode after this.
Did you get the picture, Harry? Harry?
Wow, a lot of neat stuff here. Dad, would it be okay if me and T-Bob looked around?
Sure, but don't be too long. I'm just picking up a couple of rolls of film.
Didn't any of them turn out?
Sorry, mate, they're overexposed.
You and your fancy camera. Now no one will believe we saw those dancing rocks.
Dancing rocks?
Dancing rocks?
Oh, it was nothing, really. Let's go, Mildred. He probably thinks we got rocks in our heads.
All right, finally up today is the sacred rock. Oh, boy. Here we go. The sacred rock. Venom frightens a tribe of Australian aborigines who believe their god Mimi is angry with them. When T-Bob makes an appearance, the tribe thinks he is their deity. Okay, I haven't done one of these in a while, but and I hope I can do this with headphones on, ladies and gentlemen, but... Oh my god, this episode is so bad.
Oh, it really is. I mean, this it sounds like this plot has been used before in this series, has it not?
Used before in this series and every other series, and
I mean, I know it's been used in G.I. Joe, Transformers even. I mean, I know writers recycled some of their stories back then. I mean, I just recently read an article about the Transformers series and how the writers didn't think that the shows would be remembered you know, 20, 30 years later. They've recycled plots all the time. But this one, this is just bad. I mean, even for being a recycled plot, it's a bad episode.
Well, now I know Optimus Solo loves, like, Indiana Jones and treasure hunting and everything else, and I've been pretty harsh, if I remember, on a lot of the treasure hunting episodes in this series because I just feel that they're too over. I mean, I know it's not, you know, 2000s is not the 80s, but, like, for me to really enjoy a treasure hunt movie nowadays or a treasure hunt anything, it has to star Nicolas Cage and it has to do with the National Treasure franchise. Other than that, I don't give a crap about treasure hunting at all anymore. The only classic treasure hunting movie I will ever watch is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I find the realization of treasure hunting just so boring. It just bores me to tears.
Well, I like the concept of it. I like that idea, and I think it can work in cartoons or film. Not in this one, yeah. But, you know, even the National Treasure films. I mean, I think that, you know, those were entertaining and fun. You know,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Those are entertaining and fun, but this is so not.
It really isn't. And we take a long time to really get things moving along, it seems. We don't even really get to see Venom until after, like, the first commercial break, basically about halfway through the episode is when they come in, because we know they're going to show up. It's just a matter of time before we figure out, you know, what they have to do with all this. And of course, you know, they want the treasure. But it's not a good plot, and it's just not very interesting. There's not really that much that's going on, especially in the first half of the episode. You know, you have the tourists that are there by the sacred rock, and we have the Aborigines who are there, you know, and I don't really know exactly what all happens in that first half. It just seems like they're kind of wandering around trying to figure out what's going on. And at the same time, we're just left hanging and not really very interested in what we're seeing. It's a really bad episode.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say about it.
I have no high beams whatsoever. I have none. So do you have any at all?
I would just say that it was good to see Bruce back again. We get to see Bruce Sato.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
And the other thing is, I think the last 5 minutes, there was some pretty good action, but again, it just was not enough to save this one.
Nope. We're going to head straight for the low beams after this.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh.
All right. Looks like they're doing a war dance.
The natives are restless, but no sign of Venom.
Don't worry. I've got a feeling Mayhem's saving the last dance for us.
All right, we're heading straight with the low beams, ladies and gentlemen. Seriously, Miles, Rax is as dumb as Dagger. Come on. Get your facts straight. Rax is not as dumb as Dagger.
Agreed. No way. I mean, Rax has it going on. I mean, but Dagger, yeah, Dagger, yeah, he can call him dumb, but not Rax.
No. T-Bitch, seriously, I knew that was going to happen. You never backtrack like that. Something happened where he backed up and something hit him, a rock hit him or something or other. T-Bob did something stupid and he paid the price for it. Hold the f***ing phone. They fell down that tall-ass mountain and have no injuries whatsoever? Fuck that crap right there. This is the crappiest storytelling ever. The rock has brought the sky god. Seriously, T-Bob ain't no friggin' god. No shit, you shouldn't have left them alone, Matt. Duh. I don't know why these writers and these creators basically portray Matt Tracker as probably the single worst deadbeat dad around. Seriously. Med cabinets are as dangerous as Venom. Oh. So there's a PSA note for you folks. What are your low beams for this one?
I don't have anything to add to what you have already said or what I already said about the plot. Just basically just how slow the plot moved forward, and we just wondering what is going on here. And you know, again, we know that reveal is going to be that Venom has something to do with it. It took so long to get there, and I lost interest.
I did too, honestly. I lost interest about halfway through. Honestly, the scene where they fall down the mountain and they don't die. Like, seriously, that kid and that robot should be the robot should be destroyed and the kid should be, you know, clinging to life. It just, all right. Goose egg for me on the rating. No masks whatsoever. None. I can't. I just, oh God.
Not even a one for effort, huh?
Not even. No way. If I have no high beams written down, if I can't say anything positive about this episode, then there, no.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm giving it a one, but that's being very generous. I'm on the verge of giving it a zero. I would not return to this episode again.
Never. Never again. All right, we're going to take a short break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff from the GCRN partners and other stuff that we have going on, and we'll be back with final thoughts. We will also talk briefly about the PSAs and more after this.
What are you doing?
I saw this guy jump off a building in a TV show once.
T-Bob, you should never try a stunt that you see on TV.
Right, Scott. Stunt people are trained experts, and some stunts are just camera tricks.
Yes, I sort of stunted my growth, huh?
Now you gotta remember, horses are bigger than you, but they scare easy. And some of them ain't too bright.
Kind of like T-Bob?
When you walk around behind a horse, you gotta always let them know you're there.
How come?
That keeps your riding lesson from turning into a flying lesson.
Now he tells me.
I can't find my comb.
Maybe there's an extra comb in the cabinet.
Now you've done it.
T-Ball, if you ever need anything from a medicine cabinet, ask an adult. Medicines can be dangerous and poisonous.
You're right. From now on, medicine cabinets are off limits. They can be as dangerous as venom.
And that's dangerous.
All right, folks, we are back. And just to recap, for these episodes today, I rated In Dutch a 2 out of 5 masks, the horse episode 1 out of 5 masks, and Sacred Rock 0 out of 5 masks. What were your ratings, just to recap for everybody in case they missed them?
Sure. For In Dutch, I was giving that one 3 masks. The Lipizzaner mystery, I gave a 4, and Sacred Rock gets a 1.
That middle one's just too crazy. The PSAs. What were the PSAs for this one, or these episodes?
So... In Dutch, the PSA was about not jumping, well, not trying to duplicate stunts you see on TV. So T-Bob jumps off the roof and lands on his feet and basically shrinks himself.
Yes.
because he supposedly saw something on TV, Superman or something, where somebody jumped off a building. He thought he could do it.
Oh, my God. T-Bob is the 80s version of Johnny Knoxville's Jackass. Oh, good Lord. What about for the horse episode?
This one tied into horse safety and just to let the horse know where you are so that you don't get kicked. So I thought that one was fine, and it tied into the episode.
Yeah. And for the Sacred Rock?
A PSA basically just came out of left field. It didn't have anything to do with the episode, but it has a good message. It's just don't get into medicine cabinets.
Yeah.
T-Bob was reaching into a medicine cabinet or a cabinet and some medicine fell out, hit the floor. And so that's what happened.
Yeah, I don't like it when they do PSAs that have nothing to do with the episode. I mean, the whole point of the PSA back in the 80s was to teach the children of a certain element from that episode of a cartoon what not to do. And while, you know, don't go reaching into a medicine cabinet, you know, kids shouldn't reach into the medicine cabinet by themselves is a good message.
Right.
It was very, very out of place here.
Yeah, it was.
All right. Where am I going from here? Thank you for joining us here on Mass Mayhem. There are several ways to get in contact with us to leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, which is all brand new and shiny. We have a new web design. We are in our fifth year. You can comment on all of our posts. If you look at our written reviews, you can also rate the content more so. Like if you want to leave a star rating for a film we review or a TV show we review, you can do that. Send email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Leave the show's feedback on iTunes. Please do this. Even though we are suffering for you people, please give us some sort of positive feedback. We're trying. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow @geekcastradio for all the network updates. You can follow me, TFU, and Mike. What is your Twitter?
Tim Silvers.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast or Radio Network. Call the voicemail line. Tell us what you're leaving a message for and your name. 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Mass Mayhem and wish you'll join us next time. And we'll be covering two more episodes from Mask Season 1, those being Curse of Solomon's Gorge and The Green Nightmare. For now, I am TFU and Mike with
Tim Silvers.
Podcasting is the ultimate weapon. We will catch you next time.
Interface with headquarters secured.
Level 1 emergency. Give me the best team for service underwater and in the desert.
Illusion is the ultimate weapon.